Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich savings plan.
Now, on Wednesday, you might have heard our reporter, John Cook. He spoke to some of the Ukrainian families who are settling into new rapid-build modular homes in Sligo. Last year, the government announced plans to build 700 of these modular family homes to house, I think it was around 2,800 Ukrainian refugees as one solution to the refugee accommodation crisis. The original intended completion date for phase one of this was last November. But so far, just three of the seven sites are providing shelter. The Department of Integration's lead on civic engagement for the Rapid Build programme joins me now, Evelyn Byrne. You're very welcome to Drive Time.
Thank you.
And it is a pleasure to have you in studio, I must say, to talk about what everybody in one way sometimes is talking about, these rapid build modular homes. You've been up and down the country in recent weeks welcoming people into their new homes, which I'm sure is a nice privilege to have. Talk me through, though, how many of these homes are up and running and where they are.
So at the moment we have homes up and running in Cork, in Sligo and in Claremorris, and by the end of the month we will also be in Tipperary and Cavan and Leash and Offaly then soon after. And I think the thing that you're saying up and down the country, I've met a lot of people around the country, and really the welcome that is given by local people to those arriving and who understand that these are people fleeing a war, traumatised and in great need of the support of communities, and communities throughout the country are opening their doors and their hearts to these people.
Yeah, and I'm sure the families who are getting these homes are absolutely delighted. What are they like? What are the homes like?
The homes are absolutely beautiful. The OPW has put a lot of work into developing the system, and they are working with a number of Irish factories to make these. So the homes are built in Ireland. And I think it's important to say that this is a new industry, if you like, that's developing in Ireland. I'm told it's a volumetric way of working. Now, I'm not a volumetric way of working.
But now you have to explain that one to me.
Well, I think it's moving from 2D building onwards. And so there's a lot of learning in this, which I think can then be used for other ways of building.
What happens, Evelyn? Is it that, so you said five factories.
Yeah.
Okay. So you ordered the, let's say, 20 homes or whatever from factory A. Are they assembled at the factory or on site, let's say?
They literally arrive on the back of a lorry. So
The
ground is laid out, services are put in, everything is prepared, and then the homes arrive on the back of a lorry. So then within a couple of weeks of the homes arriving on site, the people are free to move in.
Really? So then they're attached to the electricity grid, the sewage system locally, is that right?
All of that has to be done, and that's what has taken the time on a number of sites, because it is important to say that the sites that we are using for the rapid build homes are not sites that were earmarked for social housing. They are sites that we've had to begin work on from the very beginning. So we've had to do the work on the sewage, the water, the electricity, the landscaping, etc. And then, as I said, the houses arrive on the back of a lorry.
And why were they suitable for modular homes but not suitable for social and affordable homes?
Because very often there are sites where a lot of extra work is required. So, for example, in Mahon, there was a lot of knotweed on the site, which took considerable effort to remove from the site. So they wouldn't be the sites of first choice for the social housing. And it is important that we're not taking away from the social housing plans, mm-hmm. because we all realise there's also a crisis in that area.
Yeah, yeah. Let me go back for a second. So they're assembled at the factory and delivered ready-made, let's say. How big are they? What are they like when you go inside?
So they're two bedrooms, and then they have a kitchen come a living room. They're quite small. They are for temporary accommodation. They can take a family of up to four people. So mum and three kids, mum, granny and two kids or whatever. And so we look then to the families that are living in the area in emergency accommodation. And as you can imagine, for a family, a huge thing here is the fact that they're moving from a hotel room where they can now move into a home and cook their kids their meals, settle down. For a lot of these people, there is a huge amount of trauma, and it allows them to have some place that they can at least call home.
Mm-hmm. It is such a great thing, I'm sure, after the trauma of leaving Ukraine for these refugees. They're predominantly, aren't they, Ukrainian
they're
refugees?
They're those fleeing the war in Ukraine, yeah. Yes.
So it is some solace at least to have your own door, let's say. In terms of choosing the sites, Evelyn, What is the criteria, or how do you go about, when all local authorities are looking for sites, as you say, for social and affordable housing, how do you go about finding sites for these modular homes?
So the local authorities were asked to identify land that was in public ownership. That list was sent to the Department of Housing, who then give a list of sites to the OPW. And the first thing the OPW have to do is to go on site and investigate, is the site actually possible? And in a small number of cases, it hasn't been possible to develop the sites, either because of rock formations or other problems with the site. So the first thing they do is, once they get the list, they go on site, they investigate, and then the work begins.
Mm-hmm. And can I just tease this out a little bit, right? Why are some of these sites, and you've just alluded to this, suitable for modular homes but not social and affordable? Because some of the work in terms of preparatory work that you say that's being done for modular homes surely could be done as well for social and affordable homes. Can you tease that out for me a little bit more?
Well, there are other sites in areas that are being used for social housing. So not all the sites that are available for social housing are used up yet. There is a list, and of course the Department of Housing is working on that housing list for Irish needs. So these are extra sites as such. They are sites that possibly down the line would be used and can be used afterwards, because these houses have emergency planning for 3 years, and then after the 3 years it will be a decision between the Department of Children and the local authorities, you know, what happens both the site and what happens the homes.
Okay, after 3 years?
There's emergency planning for 3 years.
Okay, so, and because these homes are being developed through this emergency planning legislation, you circumvent planning permission, don't you, and public consultation?
Well, I'm not sure that I would use the word circumvent. It's an emergency. These are people who are arriving and who need to be accommodated. There is a limit to how much hotel accommodation can be found for people, how many buildings can be refurbished, etc. So we need as many ways as possible to deal with what is a crisis, what is an emergency. So it has to be done quickly. And so the planning is allowed for 3 years.
So,
we
so
don't
what
circumvent
word would you
the
use?
Discussion.
Okay, so help me out here. What word is appropriate? Do you have to go through normal planning procedures?
The planning consultation cannot take place because it would take too long. So what happens is emergency planning is given, and then we engage with the communities where the houses are developed.
After it's done?
When the site has been agreed, yes.
And I'm not being smart here, but what good is that?
Well, we discuss how the people can settle into the area, what are the issues that people feel are going to arise in a particular area, and then I work with the Department of Health, the Department of Education, etc., to address the issues.
Would it not be better to do that beforehand?
Because public consultation would take a long time, and it is only for emergency planning. It isn't permanent planning permission.
So what happens after 3 years? You're basically telling these locations and these communities, these homes are only here for 3 years. Is that right?
They only have permission on that site for 3 years.
So then you have either the
option of removing them, because as I said, they arrived on the back of a lorry. They can actually be removed and taken somewhere else where another need might be addressed, or in discussion with the local authority, it might be agreed that there is another use that these houses can be put to. But at that stage, it has to go through the full planning.
So then there will be public consultation.
Yeah. So if you like,
how likely though is it? If we take Mahon and County Cork, for example, where there are 64 modular homes brought on the back of a lorry to the site there, how likely is it after 3 years that they would be shipped out of Mahon?
Well, the site is fully developed, and if you decided that you wanted instead to put other types of homes on that site, you already have your water, your electricity, etc.
So it makes it less likely to move them?
Well, no, you can move those off and put on a different form of housing onto the site if you wish. And bear in mind, they arrived on the back of a lorry, they can leave on the back of a lorry.
Mm-hmm.
But that will be subject to discussion with the local authority.
After the fact, though?
When you look for the full planning permission.
And those people, those families then, if they're not leaving, let's say, of their own accord, would they be expected to move with the homes?
They are granted temporary protection by Ireland and by the EU, and that temporary protection will last as long as the EU has decided.
So if they have children in schools, for example, and develop friendships and networks in the location, you would uproot them?
But these people are here temporarily. They want to go back to their homes in Ukraine.
But is that a fact, though? You would?
Yes, there are a lot. Well, when you say uproot children.
Yeah, I'm saying, let's say, pick Mahon again as an example. So you've put families into these modular homes. They go to school, they develop friendships in the area, and you say, 3 years, let's go.
But it is only temporary accommodation.
Okay, seems a bit cruel and inefficient.
Well, when we're choosing these homes for the families, we take into account, for example, where they're living currently, and we try, where possible, when we move children, for example, from hotels.
And I understand the exigency that you're pointing to. How much would it cost, or how much does it cost to place one of these homes on site?
Well, the houses themselves cost around 145,000, and then there are obviously the costs involved in preparing the site.
Okay. Do they go through a procurement process?
Yes.
Okay, and you told me before we came on air there's about five companies
There are five companies, around the country who are building them. And I think I mentioned that this is a new industry. It's a way of skilling people up into this kind of building. It's another way of building up a workforce to do the building, and it can be used for a number of other ventures afterwards.
A lot of
experience will have been learned.
And so five companies, and going through a procurement process, so you presume that ensures value for money for the taxpayer and so on. They're built for 60 years to last 60 years. Are they guaranteed by the construction company?
Yes, they are.
They are, okay. And they are meeting all safety standards, fire standards and all that.
To the highest level.
Okay, tell me about this, Evelyn Byrne, who's lead on civic engagement for the Rapid Build programme as it's being rolled out. What about resistance? What about resistance from communities or people who say, look, we're not happy that these homes are here? Because I mentioned our reporter, John Cook, spoke to locals in Sligo this week, and they mostly, it has to be said, welcome the new homes. Let's have a listen to their comments first of all.
Yeah. I'm delighted for the people because, you know what, everything they're going through in Ukraine, I think it's great for them. It's tough on the people in Ireland, though, because, you know, I'm sure they're feeling, people who are homeless here are thinking, well, I mean, if you're able to build something so nice for some people
so quick,
why haven't we been looked after?
Very good. They're gorgeous. But I think there should be more done for the people in Ireland who have no homes.
What do you make of that? What's the answer to that question?
There's no question about it. Homelessness is a problem in Ireland, but pitting one group of vulnerable people against another group of vulnerable people will not solve any problems. What we're trying to do here is to find alternate accommodation for the people coming in from Ukraine so that we're not impacting on other vulnerable groups. That's number one. The second point I would make is that in this crisis, there has been much learning. And the learning that we have gained in this particular aspect of building will no doubt be used to help address other crises like homelessness. And I worked many years ago in homelessness in Dublin. At that time, we did talk about temporary accommodation, etc. And at that stage, prefabs and those kind of buildings weren't really suitable. I think in doing this work, the OPW have come up with a formula that is good quality, high end, and that can be used now going into the future to build homes which will be used for homeless and for other people.
Do you think so? And in a way, it strikes me, Evelyn, that you're in an almost unique position, You've dealt with homelessness in the past in Ireland. And now you're dealing with rolling out these modular homes with new technology for international protection applicants. And you're at the centre of those two issues. And would you say that it's quite possible, or maybe that we should, as a country, use this type of technology to address the homelessness country in the homelessness problem in the country?
I think there's a few points there. Not only have I worked in homelessness, I've also been a teacher and I'm a mother. So I completely understand where both these women and children are coming from, and also where locals are coming from in terms of getting together and meeting with the Ukrainians. So that is a good experience. And yes, I do believe that in the future, everybody wants to solve our housing crisis. I don't think there's anybody in the country that doesn't want to see that. But we have international obligations. As I drive up and down the country, I remember going to Kerry in Donegal, where my family is from, as a child, and the roads were pretty bad. We've done very well out of Europe with our roads and with the various infrastructures that we've got out of Europe. We also have international obligations. Bear in mind, we have a population of, about 5.5 million. Lebanon has almost the same population and they have 1.5 million refugees. So we have to take our place. We're a very proud nation. We take our place in the world, but we also have to take the obligations of the world.
Okay.
So utterly. We have to solve all our problems, but equally we need to stand up and be counted among the nations of the world.
Well, it is very instructive indeed to talk to you about this new phase of Ireland's addressing these problems. We're in the middle of phase one in terms of delivery. You might come back to us when phase one is complete or as the phases go on. It is a pleasure to speak with you. Evelyn Byrne, lead on civic engagement for the Rapid Build Programme at the Department of Children and Equality. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah.
Sorry, you want to add one word briefly?
Can I pay tribute to the teachers, the people around the country, the families who are giving such a warm welcome to these people, because that too is a great testimony to Ireland.
Thank you very much indeed.